research that resonates.
Schweitzer has not been wrong on any of his years and years of reporting on the Bidens.
Investigations that matter.
If your last name wasn't Biden, do you think you would have been asked to be on the board of Burisma?
I don't know. Probably not. But that's, you know, I don't think that there's a lot of things that would have happened in my life that that if my last name wasn't Biden.
The only entities, the only people that would report on this, and Peter Schweitzer, who deserves a Medal of Freedom, in my view.
This is The Drill Down with Peter Schweitzer.
Hi, this is Peter Schweitzer, and welcome to The Drill Down, where we relentlessly expose cronyism, corruption, and the abuse of power in Washington, D.C. My co-host is always dressed in a tie, Eric Eggers.
You know, most people listen to the podcast, so your continual commentary on my sartorial splendor just falls on literally deaf ears.
I think we need to start a fashion channel. It could be the Eric's Fashion Channel. But in all seriousness, when you think of the term political machine, mm-hmm. what do you think of?
I just read a really scary article about what political machines literally may look like in 2024. You've got AI, which you can program to make robocalls, but it will interact with potential voters, and you don't have to pay it or give them pizza. There's also campaign strategy memo. So when I think about the rise in AI as a machine learning, the role it will play in 2024. That's what I think of.
Yeah, that's a great guess. And technology is a huge part of a building.
I like how there's clearly a right answer and a wrong answer.
Yeah,
here.
And you're wrong. You're wrong. Because the right answer is the largest and most powerful political machine that we've ever seen. We're not talking about billionaires. We're not talking about the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. We're not talking about Wall Street. We're talking about the federal government as a political machine, and specifically how Joe Biden is weaponizing the federal government to turn it into a political machine.
No, it's the scandal and the size and scope that the traditional political machines, the Tammany Halls, the Long Machine in Louisiana, the Dailies in Chicago, they would be, I think, quite envious. They're like, dang, Joe Biden, way to go. we wish we could have thought of this.
They did. I think you're exactly right. And you know, here's the reality. A lot of the techniques, we're going to dissect today this executive order, but specifically how it's being implemented by different government agencies, including the Bureau of Prisons, for example, the Department of Education. But I think the important thing to keep in mind is that they are using the tried and true techniques of these corrupt political machines in the past. Tammany Hall, which dominated New York for a long time, they were famous for getting prisoners released early than their term was required, and then sort of taking them on voting day to vote for, of course, their candidates. They were also very familiar with sort of naturalization mills where people would come off the boat and they would register them to vote, and then they would immediately take them to vote. It's the tried and true techniques of these corrupt political machines, but it's being done on a massive scale in America that's never been done before.
No, it's true. And, you know, as someone who wrote a book in 2018 about the plot to steal the next election, which I sort of explored a lot of different aspects of election integrity and vulnerability, you know, and there's still discussion about 2020 and was the election stolen. Whatever you think happened in 2020, I think what's very clear is this executive order by the Biden administration on March 7th, 2021. So they've been in office less than two months. And then they said, okay, we're now going to leverage and weaponize the federal government as a way to get out the vote, but not for everybody, but for certain types of people. So whatever happened in 2020, I think the 2024 election is in the process of being rigged.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Now, when you read the executive order, it sounds so nice, doesn't it? I mean, the executive order, this is 14019. It was on March 7th, 2021. It says that the federal government should, quote, consider ways to expand citizens' opportunities to register to vote and to obtain information about and participate in the electoral process.
That does sound quite nice. It sounds like a warm, like picnic on a meadow. Democracy.
It does. Now, here's what the activists on the left interpret it to be. And this is from a report called Strengthening Democracy. And of course, some of these organizations actually helped craft the executive order. Strengthening Democracy, this report is issued by the ACLU, the Black Voters Matter Fund, the Hip Hop Caucus, whatever that is. Have you ever heard of the Hip Hop Caucus?
Yeah, it's adjacent to the Rock and Roll Caucus, but you know, they're younger and hipper and a little hoppier.
Well, here's what they say about this executive order. It says, President Biden's executive order on promoting access to voting voting offers an unprecedented opportunity to expand access to voter registration to millions of eligible voters, especially in communities traditionally marginalized in our democracy.
Well, when you talk about the fact that a lot of the language for this executive order, I think, was given to the Biden administration from these third-party groups, the third sentence in the executive order talks about, you know, voting's fundamental to democracy. Sounds good. Third sentence. Many Americans, especially people of color, confront significant obstacles to exercising that fundamental right. These obstacles include difficulties with voter registration, lack of election information, and barriers to access at polling places. And so they're establishing the premise, which you hear these groups then commenting on at the outset. And why it matters is I'm old enough to remember a few years ago when Georgia, in the wake of the scandalous 2020 election, said, all right, we recognize we got a little carried away with COVID. We kind of like we put ballot drop boxes kind of wherever you wanted. And they ended up being disproportionately areas that went for Biden as opposed to Trump. And we kind of let it was kind of an anything goes scenario because we didn't want to be accused of racism or in negatively impacting public health. So they changed the law. Yeah. And they said, all right, well, you can no longer hand out campaign material within 500 feet of a polling place. There's some other things you can't do. And everyone accepted that so well that they freaked out and they boycotted. They made the Major League Baseball move the All-Star game from Georgia because it was interpreted as racist. So the racially loaded language matters because it makes it impossible to have a neutral or I think even dispassionate conversation about, does this actually make sense for democracy?
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to, does it make sense for a political party, the political party that happens to be in the White House at this time?
Yeah. And we're going to go through some of the government agencies and what they're doing. What they're essentially doing is making it much easier and much more accessible for people who are on government programs, who are detained in federal prisons. It's easier, going to be easier for them to register to vote and to vote than it is for a guy who runs an HVAC business, for a guy, you know, who is a trucker. It's going to be much easier for those people to be forgotten than it will be for actually people on public assistance. And I think that's probably part of it. By the way, in this report, they estimate that this government agency effort is going to result in an additional 3.5 million voter registrations. That is not insignificant when you look at the last couple presidential elections, you know, 10,000 votes here, 20,000 votes there, how it would have changed the outcomes in certain states. When you look at congressional elections, you're talking about a potential massive shift. If they not only get people to register to vote, but actually create polling opportunities, the Bureau of Prisons is actually talking about creating voting booths in prisons themselves, as opposed to, you know, having prisoners mail in their ballots
at the expense of the HVAC workers or the truckers, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Who are going to have to go and stand in line like everybody else.
No, it's a really important point because there's a difference between making democracy accessible for all and targeting get out the vote efforts. That is the work, to be clear. That is not the work of an election administrator. That is the work of a campaign.
Right.
And that's the real, I think, criticism of it. There's two main issues here. Number one is that they're essentially replicating the get out the vote efforts that the Zuckerberg foundations funded 4 years ago. And they're also not being honest or transparent about it. There's been a number of FOIA requests to the Biden administration, the different levels of the federal agencies. Hey, what exactly are you doing? How are you interpreting this? And if it was all above board, you would think they'd just be like, hey, here's actually our plan. Here's what we're doing. But instead, the White House has brought in lawyers from the Department of Justice to fight the 2 years plus of FOIA requests. And they're not disclosing the way that American tax dollars are being used to get out the votes for targeted populations, which will definitely have a political impact. It's actually quite scandalous.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of these government agencies. I want to get your reactions to whether you think these are a good idea and what the problem is. The General Services Administration, they're kind of like the management body of the federal government.
They manage like the real estate and things, right?
Yeah, real estate and kind of personnel matters. They run
White collar.
They run the portal vote.com.
Okay.
They have expanded it now to include 12 different languages, including two Native American and an Alaskan Native language, and many more are on the way. In other words, they want people, even that let's say don't speak English, but speak a very obscure language, to actually be able to register to vote. Do you have a problem with that?
I don't have a problem with that. I think, again, that's a difference between, hey, if you go to a website, you want to register to vote, have access to a language versus like, we're going to send people out to go to your community and only your community to help register you to vote.
Yeah. So it's a portal. And, and your point would be everybody can go to it. They're not targeting specific communities. So I would agree with
Make
you.
Make it more accessible.
I don't have a problem with that. I am kind of wondering how many Alaskan native language speakers that don't speak English there are to actually vote. But, you know, hey, I could be completely wrong about
that. In a real talk way, I'd rather them be spending a lot of time, effort, and money on the Alaskan marginalized language voters than the prisoners and the welfare recipients, which I think are going to turn out much bigger numbers and will have a more significant
impact. And we're going to get to that in a minute. So let's go to the next one, the Department of the Interior.
I feel like they should be like, no, you missed a couple tribes, guys. Let's go back. Let's focus on that. Let's do an in-depth ethnographic study of their language, and let's just make sure everyone can vote on this
bad boy. The Department of the Interior, the old-time Ronald Reagan joke was only the federal government would name the department in charge of everything outdoors, the Department of Interior. But the Department of Interior, of course, takes care of a land management, federal land. So you're thinking, okay, this could affect ranchers. This could affect cowboys, right? Maybe they're registering cowboys to vote. No. Their goal is to offer high-quality voter registration services at tribal colleges and universities it operates. So that's the extent of their voter outreach.
And that, by the way, is significant because that's one federal agency. There's another federal agency that's also targeting college campuses. That's the Department of Education, which seems more on brand for them than the Department of Interior. But again, the key thing to think about is this a demographic that seems politically neutral, or does this demographic seem to be politically impactful?
Right.
And is it fair to criticize the Biden administration for doing something that's not in the best interest of democracy as much as it's the best interest of their political future?
Right. It's exactly right. And these, what you're going to notice with all of these government agencies, it's all targeted towards demographics that skew highly in favor of Democrats. That's I think, the problem. And again, if the Department of Interior were working to register all kinds of voters, rural voters, then you would say, okay, maybe we can talk more about this, but that's not the case. So the Department of the Interior, Department of the Treasury. Mm-hmm. All right. So this are they registering Wall Street guys? Are they, you know, what do they do? Accountants? Are they registering accountants?
I like when you guess different vocations. That's why I'm always smiling, like truckers, HVAC workers, cowboys, accountants. It's like Peter Schweitzer imagines the proletariat. Go.
So the Department of Treasury, here's what they're doing at the Department of Treasury. Promote voter registration access to the low-income clients of its tax preparation clinics. So in other words, these are going to be low-income people who don't prepare their own taxes. They get government help doing so. That's their sole focus for voter registration.
So again, it's like the Department of Treasury, it's tax season. In fact, it's tax week this week. So if you are a liberal voter, congratulations on doing a little Oppo research. But it sounds like you can go to a free tax prep clinic where you'll be given material in terms of, and what's the other key piece of this is if you're going to one of these like free tax prep clinics, you're probably receiving federal tax dollars. If you're receiving federal tax breaks, their job is to help you get more benefits.
Your full credits. You're not paying taxes, net taxes.
100%. Right. And so you're, statistically speaking, much more inclined to be a Democrat voter.
Exactly. All right. We'll go to the Department of Health and Human Services.
Okay.
Doctors, nurses. I'm trying here. I'm trying.
Maybe a radiation techs. I don't know.
Well, here's actually what HHS is focusing on. Integrate voter registration into healthcare.gov.
Yeah, the goal Obamacare
to
portal.
Effectively integrate voter registration into the actual application for benefits on healthcare.gov. So in other words, if you're getting government healthcare assistance, we want to register you. Again, we can guess where this voter registration is going to skew, and we can guess where probably the majority of these people are actually going to vote.
No, it's absolutely right. And by the way, and there's lots of different examples of this, and we haven't even gotten to the, I think the best ones, which is the prisons and the education, Department of Education, which are leveraging Pell Grants. And they're basically saying, like, if you're in a federal, you know, grad study, work study program, then you're taking Pell Grants, then you can work, you can be qualified as part of your work study requirements to register people to vote on college campuses, which you can only imagine the impact that's going to have. But why it matters and why I think it's potentially triggering for people that care about election integrity and remember what happened in 2020 is this is exactly what the Zuckerberg money did 4 years ago. Yeah. And the best example is what happened in Wisconsin. They said, okay, we're going to give kind of money to anybody that applies for it. But what they end up doing is targeting five areas in Wisconsin, specifically five jurisdictions. And they gave them a lot more money than they were supposed to give them, or they said they would give them. And a follow-up report said that the election officials who worked in conjunction with the Zuckerberg-founded nonprofit crossed the line between election administration and campaigning.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line, right? Yeah. So like, if somebody's just registering people to vote, that's one thing. But That's literally what campaigns do. That's what these liberal AI bots are working with these campaigns to do, is target voters, get them registered. And we're paying for every other type of federal government agency to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the Department of Education, you were just talking about, their goal is to integrate voter registration into the free application for federal student aid. They want it both electronic and hard copy of the student aid report that students get, saying, here's how much federal government assistance you're getting. Here's your voter registration information. So, again, you're talking about students that are receiving federal assistance. They're not doing this for people who are, you know, paying their own way. Right. There's no efforts being made to target them. And of course, people that don't go to college, who are starting their own business, who are investing in a truck or, you know, some other entity rather than getting federal assistance. They're not focusing on those people either.
So, and this is, be real clear about this. And there's other states where they've changed the laws, and now they're going to automatically register you to vote when you get your driver's license. Right. Yep. But when you're registering people to vote, the threshold for receiving government benefits is different than being a legal voter.
Right.
And so what the net effect of this will be, and this is why 2020 mattered, just from a, man, does this even make sense? And can we at least be honest about the fact that we just had everybody, we had 45% of the country voted via mail-in ballot in 2020. That's historically high. And that is statistically proven to be the least secure way to conduct a ballot, right?
Yeah.
And so everybody did that. But then we're like, oh no, it was the most secure, most fair, most free way to do it. But what's happening now is all these people are getting added to voter rolls.
Right.
Which then means, because these same agencies are going to now send them a ballot. But then I don't know that there's necessarily time for these people, once they get registered, to be verified or confirmed that they should be voting.
Right.
And we know that's a problem. I mean,
it's a huge problem.
That, you know, we know that there's been, I think it's like 12% of all registrations are erroneous or flawed. That's like the bipartisan committee cited that, Supreme Court cited that statistic. That's in, you know, my book. So all you're doing is adding more people, which you're increasing the error rate. And then because we become used to like not having the safeguards in place. So you're just going to, I think, further erode confidence in the net accuracy of the election outcome.
Absolutely. And if you've got fraudulent ballots out there, it counteracts a legitimate ballot for whoever that other person is voting for. So, all right, U.S. Marshal Service. Now, I always think of that show Justified, right? Weren't they marshals in that show?
They were very good, U.S.
Well,
Marshals.
Apparently, they are going to start registering voters that are in federal custody because the U.S. Marshal Service is going to ensure eligible voters in federal pretrial custody can exercise their voting rights. And that means opening the door to polling places in its facilities. So they're actually going to have voting booths in federal detention facilities for people that are being held for felonies. Again, is it going to be easier for an average person out there who is, you know, holding down a job or two to go and vote on election day, or a guy who's in federal custody who can be marched down the hallway to vote? I mean, that's the kind of inverted system now that they're creating.
And imagine you're a U.S. Marshal. Your job is to go out and find the bad guys. And now, because of this executive order, the Mississippi Attorney General actually cited this in his lawsuit against this executive order. He said this order is being forced, is making U.S. Marshals modify more than 900 contracts with prisons and jails in order to provide voter registration documents. So it's like, it's not just, hey, it's a good idea to like let everybody vote. It's no, this is this guy's job.
You're required to do this.
And they're just now told, no, this is your job now, actually. Less bad guy time catching them, more time with the bad guys helping them vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. No, it's weaponizing the federal government, who are targeting specific people. I mean, you, I think, brought up this example when we talked earlier. Imagine if the Trump administration had said, we are going to use the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms to register people at gun shows, right? I mean, would there be an outcry about that?
Yeah, or the Department of Education, we're going to go to every church, and we're going to register people to vote at churches.
We're going to register people at churches to vote. There would be outrage, and I think there would likely should be outrage for those things. But this is precisely what's being done. But I would say this is even worse, in the sense that you're talking about here people that are highly dependent for assistance from the federal government. They're either getting student loans. This is what they all have in common, right? They're getting student loans. They're getting federal health care. They're getting some other form of federal government assistance, or they're in federal custody. And my point is, yes, these people have a right to vote, but we should not be making it easier for them to vote than it is for people who are actually footing the bill for the money that these people are actually receiving.
Every example you cited is really good. My favorite, and I think among the more troubling, is actually the housing and urban development, which has got 3,000 public housing authorities managing 1.2 million public housing units, and they've been instructed to run voter registration drives in those units. Now,
Fraud there.
Well, that's literally the point. In the book, I think the most damning example, and one of the examples of, you had an election that was proven in court to be fraudulent because of all the absentee ballot fraud that came through it. They had to redo it because it was literally people collecting ballots from these public housing units. And, you know, it just, like, it was totally illegal. It was a total scam. The opposing campaign was in St. Louis. They found it, they flagged it, and they were able to get it done. But that's a business model for a lot of different campaigns. And so if you're going to be, you know, holding voting drives in these public housing units, that plus, like, the Department of Ag using people that sign up for welfare and SNAP benefits to then register to vote or have other election information. One analysis suggests that will increase voting turnout by voters on the welfare program by up to 30%.
Yeah.
And those poor people disproportionately, when the welfare recipients are going to vote for Democrats.
Yeah. And that's what we need, right? We need more people that are on public assistance voting. I'm not saying that they shouldn't vote, but I'm saying making it easier for them than people that are actually out there working. They've got kids they're taking care of. They've got a job or two they're doing, is completely inverted. And yet that is how the federal government is being weaponized. And that's why I think this is a political machine. Because that's what Tammany Hall did. That's what the Curley machine did in Boston. They focused on getting out the people that owed them something to get them to the voter rolls. They didn't use city employees to get everybody in Boston to vote equally or try to register as many people as possible. They just voted on these small segments that owed them big time and made sure that they got to the polls. And it seems to me this is Tammany Hall. This is the Curley machine. This is the Daley machine on a national scale that Joe Biden is implementing.
And what's worse about it, too, is that it's kind of illegal in this sense. In 2022, there was an effort in the Senate by Chuck Schumer to eradicate this legislative filibuster. They're trying to federalize some aspects of the election system. And of course, that's not okay because we conduct elections at the state level, right? Yep. And that's part of the founding fathers. That's right. We're a republic that way. And so it was defeated. They wanted to expand voting by mail, eliminate security protocols at the federal level, including voter ID. So, like, the feds tried this takeover of elections and it didn't work because they don't have the numbers to do it. So they're like, okay, well, we can't do that. So instead, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And they are doing it.
Yeah. And here's why this is, I think, so important to remember in terms of why the founding fathers created the system they did. You're going to have corrupt people in government, right? We've made a living. We've built a foundation on.
Thank you very much for that, by the way. Yeah. This blazer, actually.
You know, on corruption, it's part of what political leaders do. But if you have national federal elections, all you need to do is capture one government agency that's focused on those elections, and you can now have a corrupt entire national election by just controlling that office. By leaving it at the state level, if Illinois is corrupt, if Vermont is corrupt, if Louisiana is corrupt, okay, that state's corrupt. That's terrible. We got to clean it up. But it doesn't spill over into the rest of the country.
It's a great point.
That was the genius, and they wanted to contain these kinds of, you know, terrible behaviors. With this, you're not getting that. When you federalize elections, you are going to get cronyism, corruption writ large.
Plus, I mean, it's sort of acknowledged that corruption does happen in elections. Everyone's sort of like, you talk about the 1960 election with JFK. It's like, oh no, they definitely stole that in Illinois. It's like Chicago.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Right.
We don't want the federal government elections. We don't want America's elections to turn into Chicago elections in 1960.
It's the same thing with the Electoral College, right? If you think about it, one of the reasons the Electoral College makes a lot of sense and is good is if you just had a national election, it was the popular vote. All you'd have to do is kind of calculate on a national scale and then dump a bunch of votes in, say, California.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't matter. It makes it a lot more complicated when you have 50 different states. Obviously, some matter more than others. But when you have all these states you have to cover, it becomes a lot more complicated to stuff the ballot box.
So the good news is this executive order and the way it's being implemented specifically within different agencies, even though we don't actually know because the Biden administration will tell us, it is being challenged. And it's being, I think, just this week has been taken to the Supreme Court. We'll see what happens if they accept it or not. But there are legal challenges at play. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons why we're flagging it on this podcast is, number one, elections matter. Number two, the way we conduct elections matter. And so this lawsuit against this executive order's implementation, I think, will be among the more significant storylines to watch in November, regardless of who gets picked for vice president, you know, who's campaigning where. It's like, no. What's the federal government doing in terms of voter registration? Because number one, they're registering voters today. What about actually collecting ballots after?
That's right. Collecting ballots where the voting facilities are being held. Mm-hmm. I mean, it opens up all this stuff.
Like if they're going to let you do it in prison.
Yeah. Yeah. No, nothing ever bad happens in prison.
Right? I'll take your word for it.
Well, we appreciate it as always listening to this podcast. We're going to stay on top of this story. I would encourage you to pick up Eric's 2018 book, Fraud. It's a terrific read, and you're going to read it and wonder, man, this predicted so much of what happened in 2020 and what is going on right now.
Just to follow up on that, I also would encourage you to pick up my book, 2018. And so would the publisher, by the way. That would be awesome.
So please do so. Eric might even sign a copy if you send it to him. But in all seriousness, you should pick it up. We're going to stay on top of the story. We will continue to inform you about it. If you want to know more about our research, you can go to thedrilldown.com. And of course, this podcast is available wherever fine podcasts are located. Until next time, thanks again for listening.